Okay, this is side two of the second session.
Yeah.
The date is May 1st, 2006, and Scott is going to now give us the fourth person. Just a little thing. We are going to continue where we left off in session one. We didn't finish the thought about John Stewart's Daily Show. I don't think I mentioned on tape, but about media and watching news and Comedy Channel. We need to talk about that when we finish these bios.
Right. Good. Now, Croker deals with such high-level abstractions, he's difficult to summarize. So I'm taking a pot shot at it. I'm doing it from the perspective of Bob's chart, and I'm not...
Now, these bios that you are reading, you wrote them about 6 weeks ago?
Yeah.
In 2006, for another series of tapings we were doing.
Right. Right.
But we never got to deal with them.
That's right.
Yeah.
So,
Croker.
Yeah, Arthur Croker. Now, not unlike Baudrillard, is a professor of philosophy of cultural and media studies, whose insights correspond to the mythic government phase of technology, which we entered on Bob's chart around 1980. His job, like a deep-sea diver, is to feel around the deep for archaeological traces of phantom creatures. In this case, the creatures are media archetypes that have compressed into patterns of virtual data flesh. These merging patterns are abstract and difficult to recognize using perceptual methods of pattern recognition. Because data in this realm is not discrete, Croker must assume the role of artist, and like the shaman entering into the realm of the densely packed, his job is to return with stories that compress excessively imploded and overloaded patterns of information into simplified patterns of living metaphor. Teasing out data creatures from this realm causes them to become perceptible and thus manageable. So that's my little diddly on Croker.
No, that's good. Okay, Arthur Croker, and you've read a couple of Croker's books, right?
Data Trash.
Right. And it's a deep read, thick read, dense read, so it's commendable if someone reads them and thinks about them for a while. Okay, Croker was born in 1945. In, I'm assuming where he grew up is where he was born. It was an Ontario mining town or industrial, boondock way out there, north of Ontario, way out there, in a rough wilderness kind of territory of Canada. And he grew up, and he told me that he first read McLuhan's The Medium is a Massage, which came out in 67, so he probably read that. He'd be 22, and he read it while working in the local mines, the mines or rock crushing machine building. All right, he said that's how he remembers first encountering McLuhan. He said he'd be wondering while doing this rough, labor, he was meditating on what does it mean the medium is a message, So. He's probably a bright student in high school because he went to a Catholic seminary in the States somewhere, I think in the northern parts of the United States, to study to be a Catholic priest. So we assume he got brought up a Catholic. And, do you know what a Catholic seminarian is? You know that phrase?
Someone who goes to seminary school?
Yeah, and is learning to be a priest, preparing to be a priest.
Okay.
At some point, I guess before he became a priest, he left the school. He got alienated by whatever was going on in that seminary or in the Catholic Church or his own sense of devotion to the Catholic religion. And he ended up at McMaster University, which is in Hamilton, a city just down the road from Toronto in Ontario, Canada. And I think he took political economy, whatever it was called back then. And I know his wife, that he's done a lot of writing with, Mary Louise Croker, she was an American who left the United States in the late 60s. She may have had a baby. I don't know if she was married with the previous person or whatever, but she had a baby and brought it and came to Canada, and she ended up at McMaster. And I'm assuming, I don't know the exact details, they met at McMaster, and they eventually got married. So Croker gets into political economy and probably sociology, and he did do a PhD on Talcott Parsons, P-A-R-S-O-N-S, who was a famous American sociologist, I think. Coker later wrote that Talcott Parsons was the first to begin to realize the world of symbolic exchange, a term used by Baudrillard. Parsons was noticing the what would later be called the virtual economy, but used the word symbolic. I think that was the phrase, symbolic modes of exchange. He was writing about that in the 60s, probably the 60s. So that prepared Croker for discovering the French postmodern thinkers like Barthes, Derrida, Deleuze, Guattari, Lyotard, Baudrillard, and Foucault. So he begins teaching after he graduates from McMaster in Manitoba. And so he is teaching in the city where, in Winnipeg, Manitoba, at the University of Winnipeg. I may have said University of Manitoba for McLuhan. I don't know what it is. The University of Winnipeg, University of Manitoba in Winnipeg. Maybe that's what it is. So he started teaching the old school that McLuhan went to. McLuhan went there in the early 30s. 40 years later, Croker in the middle 70s, early to middle 70s, is teaching in the same university. But in 1976, or just before 76, he met a University of Toronto professor named David Cook. And David Cook told me that he kind of turned Croker on to Foucault and some of these French postmoderns. But if you listen to my interview with Croker done in 2004, I ask him if it's true that David Cook turned him on to this 1970s knowledge coming out of Paris, and he said, no, he was aware of it. He taught Foucault when Foucault's books first came out. So I don't know why David Cook said that or what the deal is there, but Croker was aware of Foucault and some of these people in the middle 70s, he said, on his own. But probably David Cook was the only other guy in Canada who knew this stuff. And so they decided to do a Canadian journal, there were all kinds of other cultures and countries had their postmodern journals. So they decided to do a Canadian one. So it's called the Canadian Journal of Political and Social Theory, or the Canadian Journal of Social and Political Theory, but I'm pretty sure it's Canadian Journal of Political and Social Theory. And they started that in 1976. And they started having essays by Baudrillard and Habermas and all these, what later were called POMO people, P-O-M-O for postmodern. The stuff that would become a bane, a problem for liberal and conservative thinkers, the traditional thinkers in universities when the POMO studies took over. And many people think that was a drag. But Croker was in with the best of them and publishing and creating a really good, lively journal. I remember Robert Fulford, the famous Canadian critic, praising that magazine in the late 70s, that journal, as that you get the neatest, most avant-garde ideas in there, largely political, economic, sociology, and cultural. So, I think, let's see, no, I won't say that yet. So so this journal establishes a pretty good reputation in the late 70s, early 80s. And in 1984, this is the first time I ever heard of Croker. I'd only heard of the journal. I wasn't reading those kind of things in the early 80s. And I saw Robert Fulford interview Croker in 1984, and he did a book, and here was a guy talking about McLuhan. And this was the only, you didn't hear anything about McLuhan in the 80s. Suddenly here's a guy who wrote a book on McLuhan. But he came up with a neat angle. He took three Canadian thinkers, George Grant, Harold Innes, and Marshall McLuhan, and spelled out the thesis that the reason communication studies had its impetus or inspiration in a large part from Harold Innes and Marshall McLuhan and a little bit by George Grant, but not so much. Anyways, at least Innes and McLuhan, the reason Canadians, Croker came up with this theory, could see media effects is that it was a country bolted together by the railroad in 1867, vast wilderness and sparse population. So it was relying on the radio and newspaper to have a sense of national identity. And the national identity was created by bolting together the 10 provinces with the Canadian National Railroad, all right, which was built in the 1860s. And Canada became a country in 1867. So here's Croker saying, Canadians are pretty good on communication studies because of the nature of the country they grew up in. And that attracted people. You know, oh, that's interesting. That gives a context for McLuhan and Innes and those wacky Canadians and their talk of media as the message and stuff like that. So Fulford gave an interview, interviewed Croker, and I thought, oh, this is interesting. So I got the book and read it and was impressed with it. Finally, someone had done, on the McLuhan angle, had really got some information and did some research on a lot of the thinking underpinning McLuhan as a Catholic Thomas philosopher, Thomist, you know, Thomas Aquinas, that kind of thinking and its influence on McLuhan. At least Croker noticed that. And Croker was also being educated by, I guess, the Jesuits in the Catholic institutions. He would be well-versed in Thomas Aquinas and St. Augustine and those people. Okay, so he that book comes out and puts him on the local map, Canadian cultural map, and the journal, Canadian Journal of Political Social Theory, continues. But in 1986 or so, yeah, 1986, David Cook and Arthur, and maybe his wife has credits on that book, I'm not sure, Mary Louise, they put out a book called The Postmodern Scene, where they took on Baudrillard and Barthes and Derrida and Michael Serres and other these French thinkers who were riding high in the Middle Ages. And Croker put a neat spin on it and attempted to get past them. And one of the reasons and advantages he had is he had a good understanding of McLuhan, who was a big influence on all these French postmodernists, all right? So because Croker did his homework, he came up with an interesting, as you say, very abstract response to postmodernism. He called it bimodernism, B-I, hyphen, modernism. So the postmodern scene, that book is really interesting, as he and David Cook write essays dealing with different aspects of French postmodernism. And that put them, they got a little more awareness among, I would say, artists, counterculture groups, and activists, and sophisticated people who were into critical theory in the late 80s. But then they topped that with a book called The Panic Encyclopedia. Have you ever seen that?
No, I haven't.
The Panic Encyclopedia he did with, again, David Cook and his wife, Mary Louise Croker. And that was really interesting. It was sort of like, you could look at that as a combination of McLuhan's Mechanical Bride, understanding media through the vanishing point, presenting cultural phenomena, news events, and people like Gorbachev and Reagan and all that stuff in the 80s with neat commentaries that were very dense and multidisciplinary. They were able to comment on all kinds of different aspects, physics, chemistry, sociology, economics. So that book actually may put them on the map. That was a very popular book and sold a lot. Now, Croker was able to publish the book in 1984, McLuhan. That book was called Technology in the Canadian Mind, subtitle Grant, McLuhan, Innes, something like that, three names, subtitle of Technology in Canadian Mind. He had his own book publishing operation. He published it. His books probably wouldn't have been published by regular academia. So he pulled that off. And then the postmodern scene, published, I think they were called New World Editions, was his own self-publishing entity. And then they put out the Panic Encyclopedia. So they were able to put out, like McLuhan's Explorations magazine in the 50s, they published pretty avant-garde stuff that was would not have been published by anybody else. Just too wacky, probably, too nutty. So even though it's not nutty, in retrospect, it was right on. They were like McLuhan. They were writing about the hidden ground. So so Croker in early 90s, he put out a good book called The Possessed Individual, which is his personal essays on Baudrillard, Foucault, Lyotard, Deleuze and Guattari, Barthes, and whatever one I left out. I think there's six of them. Let's see, Foucault, Barthes, Baudrillard, Lyotard, Deleuze and Guattari. Either that's it or I'm missing one. Anyways, that was possessed individual. But then in the early 90s, the computer world was coming in, and a lot of universities professors were on the early net, the late 80s, early 90s. That reminds me, William Thompson said he was on the net in 86, 87, and he didn't like it. It was just too many emails and too much information overload. That's when universities had networks. You could hook up with other professors and that, email and gather data quickly. So Croker is part of that world in the early 90s, and he teams up with another professor in maybe Chicago, I think, Michael Weinstein, and they start emailing back and forth chapters for a book. So they co-wrote a book on the internet without even being physically in touch with each other, even though they were longtime friends, because Michael Weinstein used to write essays for the Canadian Journal of Political and Social Theory. So they composed this book called Data Trash, and the subtitle is A Theory of the Virtual Class. So as leftists and scholars of Marx, they were presenting a new thesis. Marx critiqued the bourgeois class and the working, dealt with the working class. Well, Croker and Weinstein said, no, there's a virtual class running the world now. So that book came out in 1994 called Data Trash, A Theory of the Virtual Class. It's a pretty amazing book. And that got attention in Europe, and a couple of activists in Europe and Amsterdam and that decided to go on the net, because Croker said, we've got to get inside this new medium and stir up anti-environments. So that inspired a whole bunch of European activists, probably were laying around in the late 80s, kind of apathetic, not knowing what to do with the virtual society and the new communications revolution of the 90s, and they probably felt, well, what's the point of this stuff? But Croker laid out in their terms, sophisticated terms, and in progressive postmodern terms, a reason why they should get on the net. So these groups got on there, and they got very involved in the net world, and some of them are professors now and writing books on the net, life in the net in the 90s and this and that. There's a guy named Geert Lovink, maybe. There's two Geerts, and I get them mixed up. Geert is G-E-E-R-T. And it's Geert Lovink. They started something called Adilkno. Forget that. A-D-I-L-K-N-O. I think it was like Institute for Illegal Knowledge or something. So Croker was in the middle 90s, when Wired magazine interviewed him, he was known as the McLuhan of the 90s, because the BBC named him that early 90s, quite early, even before the internet became mass culture. So Croker was being praised as among the intellectuals of literate culture, we'll call it, as the McLuhan of the 90s. And Wired quotes that and talks about him that way. So Croker is inspiring Are You Serious? You ever heard of him?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, Are You Serious was inspired by Croker.
Mondo 2000.
Yeah, Mondo 2000 and that gang out in 93, 94. So Croker was the hip guy of the middle 90s. And in the early 90s, and his wife, too, they would go around and do performances. They even had a band, a punk band, in the 80s. They'd play in clubs, and they would do performance art kind of. They'd read their essays, but mix in other media while doing it, slideshows, maybe music, backgrounds. So I remember the first time I heard of Croker. No, I heard of him, but the first time I heard of his, I knew of his book. At the time I heard his other media things was at CKLN, where I was had a show in late 80s. Somebody brought in a tape, and it was a collection of performance audio stuff that Croker did. Well, I forgot to say that Croker, in 1996, he's at the University of Manitoba in Winnipeg. He starts the journal. Sometime in the late 70s, early 80s, he moves to Concordia University in Montreal, and he's a professor of, I think it's political economy or political science. And so he's well-known professor in Concordia through the 80s, and they keep the journal going, and then he puts up those books I mentioned, and that gives him a higher profile. But he's operating out of Montreal. If you remember in my essay on the literate aesthetic cliche probes of the American classroom without walls, I lay out the five schools of media ecology. The first school is Toronto Media College, the Toronto School of Media Ecology, which is McLuhan and Innes and Barry Nevitt and people around McLuhan. The second school of media ecology, which is the New York School of Media Ecology, is around the promoter of the French postmoderns, like Baudrillard and Deleuze and Guattari, this professor at Columbia University named Severo Lafrenière. He is creating, with his little book called The Semitex, which he told me was modeled on McLuhan's little mediumism massage paperback format. He published essays by all these guys. Oh yeah, Virilio is the other guy. V-I-R-I-L-I-O is the other guy in Croker's book, The Possessed Individual, where he goes through each one of these guys and writes really interesting essays, dense, thick, imaginative, qualified essays, qualified in the sense of very perceptive. Virilio is published by Severo Lafrenière, who's a French professor in the French department, at French culture professor in the French department at Columbia University. He publishes Semiotext, S-E-M-I-O-T-E-X-T-E. And I called all that stuff that they produced in the 80s the New York School of Media Ecology. I pronounce in this essay on my website Croker as the Montreal School of Media Ecology, because Croker is providing a counter-environment to the Toronto School of Media Ecology and the New York Severo Lafrenière Pomo School of Media Ecology coming out of Paris, the headquarters in New York City. So Croker is doing that, and so he gets on the, when Data Trash comes out and he's talking about people getting on the net, he gets on the net, and they take their journal, Canadian Journal of Political Social Theory, and make it an internet journal, and it's called C Theory. You could think of C as Canadian, but he says C stands for crash, because crash theory, the Pomo's guys are known as critical theorists or theorists into theory. Well, Croker writes about it as crash theory. And it's his updating of McLuhan, his awareness of McLuhan, that gives him an edge over the Toronto guys like Eric McLuhan, Frank Zingroni, Derek DeKirchhoff, Bob Logan, who were getting books out in the 80s and early 90s, especially in the early to middle 90s when the McLuhan revival started after Wired Magazine made McLuhan the patron saint of Wired Magazine, put that up on their masthead. Croker is able to present, in my mind, more perceptive stuff, more updating of McLuhan and other things than the second generation of the Toronto School of Media Ecology. So Croker, so the phrase crash theory is the meaning of C theory, one of the meanings, C theory. But remember, they really wanted to create a Canadian identity in their journal, so the C can stand for Canada, too. So C theory, you can go there, ctheory.net, I think it is. Go on online and see the whole inventory of articles by Baudrillard and all kinds of people, North American postmodern or post-postmodern scholars. They are featured on C Theory essays, you know, hundreds of them since 1994, 95. But Croker also, being a mixed media artist or interested in that, he offers other kinds of stuff on that site, videos and mixed media. So he's always been doing not just book stuff. So that's C-Theory, the site is considered one of the best sites in the world. Somebody says that, some intellectual, philosophic, or some department of academia or some authority made a quote about C-Theory as one of the top journals in the world, internet journals at least. So Croker established that, and so Croker is pretty successful. Now I remember years ago, late 90s, I heard that he wanted to get out of Concordia, leave Montreal, and he was making overtures to get to the States. And late 90s, early 2000, he went to Cornell, where Thompson had been. And I think he did a little work there for a year. And then I think he went to Boston University, I think, 2000, 2000-2001 and did a seminar there. So he's starting to move out of Montreal and work at other universities. But just a couple of years ago, he was given what's called a chair at Victoria, University of Victoria, on Vancouver Island, off the west coast of Canada, just off of Vancouver, which is on land in the province of British Columbia. Vancouver's a mainland city, but there's an island called Vancouver Island, and there's a city called Victoria, and they have a university there, and Croker was given a chair. Now, he's born in 1945, so he's now 61, so in his late 50s, he was given this chair, which in Canada, apparently, if you are a reasonably distinguished professor, they'll give you a chair where you can do projects and get some kind of budget or something. So he's a chair, and it's called the Technology and Culture and something else. The interesting thing is, Program for Technology and Culture, is that he reverses what McLuhan Center was called in the 60s, the Center for Culture and Technology. Well, his is, Croker's is, the Center for Technology and Culture, and there may be another word, art or theory or something. But it's interesting he reverses Technology and Culture from McLuhan's original logo. So he's had a chair, and you can go on his C-Theory and go see lectures and seminars that he's held with visiting professors, and you can watch them. It's all there on video. They tape it. So Croker's very up on the latest technology. He's always, through the 90s when he was on the net at C-Theory in Concordia, he always had the latest designers and musicians making avant-garde videos or internet art. So Croker is now, you know, in his 60s, out there in Victoria, in his the golden sunset of his career, at least as an academic, and still, I saw a book put out by some Canadian or maybe Toronto professor of great minds. What's it called? Massive Change by Bruce Mao, I think. But anyways, Massive Change. You look at that. Look for that. You'll see interviews with all kinds of people, and it has Croker in there. I mean, it's one of the people. Croker said about McLuhan and how McLuhan did psychic surgery on the media. So that's pretty good. That's a metaphor I used a long time ago, and I don't know if Croker got it from me, but he's that sophisticated in understanding McLuhan that you could come up with that idea. If you have a deep understanding of McLuhan, you can come up with some of the notions that I came up independently, because those notions naturally unfold if you perceive McLuhan that deeply. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's a good little paragraph or two on McLuhan and the present state of society. But what happened is basically he was one of the best critics of digital life in the 90s. There's a collection of essays by all the people who wrote essays on C-Theory called Digital Delirium. You can get that book, came up with 97, but when he was in Boston or Cornell, when he was in the States after moving out of Concordia in Montreal in 2000, 2001, found the students were quite confused or disturbed by developments in genetics and bioengineering and all that. And he kind of had a change. He said, I'm gonna drop my focus on the what he called the digital nerve or the digital matrix and start dealing with this new genetic engineering world, which is just something humans never had before. So his last couple books are on that over the last few years. And that's what I talked to him about these changes that he went through over the last 7 years on the interview with Eben in the first interview done in the fall of 2004. The second interview was done in the fall of 2005. So you can get them from Eben, or they should be on our website at some point.
Yeah, that's, alchemy.com or?
Radioalchemy.com.
Yeah.
Have you heard one of those lectures?
Yeah, I did. It was astonishing. Very, very valuable.
Yeah, was that the first one or the more recent one, do you think?
I think it was the first one.
Okay. Do you remember me going, tracking Croker back to his past and working him through?
No, I must have heard the second one.
Right, actually, we had that conversation last week about that. Yeah, I think you heard the second one. Anyways, the Eben interacts a lot on the one you heard, right?
Somewhat.
He
goes into detail about the puritanical underpinnings of the development of North America.
Yeah, no, that's the second one. And Eben got a little more involved than the first hour, first session we did in 2004. So Croker has, he's saying it's a change, but he goes back and takes Heidegger, Marx, and Nietzsche, always key thinkers, since he's of the new left, or the left in quotes, always key thinkers in his life. And he adapts these three guys to the new genetic engineering problem. And maybe later I'll go into it, but that's my formula of the Andor meme and the anthropomorphic physical, the AM Andor meme / AP anthropomorphic physical. That interplay, I see that Croker is working, dealing with. He dealt with just the Android meme in the 90s. Now he's dealing with this weird return of flesh, but flesh is mutated flesh. Okay, we'll develop that later when we get into my stuff. But the thing is, so Croker is doing that. One thing I wanted to say is that Croker, in critiquing the French postmodernists in the 80s to create the third school of media ecology, he brought in his seminarian, Catholic seminarian knowledge of St. Augustine. And he was saying that St. Augustine was the first postmodernist. Now, that's very interesting. I mean, that's a guy, 2,000 years ago, no, 1,500 years ago. How could he be part of the 20th century second half of the 20th century postmodern ethos? Well, that's the interesting case that one has to understand Croker. So he had Talcott Parsons, gave him an advantage in understanding the new Baudrillardian world, and his Jesuit training helped him come up with a unique angle, St. Augustine. Now, McLuhan made a lot out of St. Augustine and his influence as a rhetorician, and a grammarian, but a rhetorician, continuing the tradition of Cicero, who was the famous rhetorician in the Roman period, before Christ. Or as the Evergreens call it, before the Nazarene. Evergreens being something channeled through Michael Beck Reed. A group of entities channeled through Michael Beck Reed. And they did a booklet on Jesus called the Nazarene. So Cicero is the heavy archetype of rhetorical education. St. Augustine picks up on that 300 years later. And it's interesting that overlap between McLuhan, St. Augustine, and Croker's use of St. Augustine. Because McLuhan says the 20th century is a rhetorical century. In a simple way, people can understand it, it's propaganda and advertising. Just the whole world of stylistic communication. That's rhetoric, or the art of rhetoric, and the update 20th century version of rhetoric. So rhetorical knowledge coming from St. Augustine was important both for McLuhan and Croker. Okay, so let's see. Remember last week I was talking about the development of the soul through how Augustine created this third term, the individual psychology, the soul, as a way of overcoming the contradictions of classical experience, the Greek's experience, the pagan world. Remember me talking about that? Well, that was developed by Croker through his knowledge of St. Augustine and maybe doing a bit of McLuhan twist to it. Okay, so, yeah, what I say is that St. Augustine developed visual space and made it an individual psychology, which we call the Christian soul, right?
Right.
So Croker, I think that's Croker. I think I've pretty well run through his course, right?
Okay.
Oh, so then what is Croker? He's not a rhetorician. McLuhan's a rhetorician. Thompson's a grammarian. And LaRouche is a dialectician. Well, Croker is outside that. Croker has occasionally talked about himself as an anarchist, or he represents the anarchist tradition. So that's interesting. So I consider him the anarchist tradition, or the cultural tradition, or the non-academic, or not the trivium, you know what I mean? He's not in the trivium. He's well-versed in logic, grammar, and rhetoric, but he has a pop culture sensibility. Now, you know what that is? He has a quadrivial sensibility. It's quadrivium. The quadrivium is music, arithmetic, geometry, and astronomy. But just basically music, just take that part of it. Music is the oral tradition, the pre-literate tradition. And when the Western literacy world of Greece encapsulated the musical world and the oral culture and the shamanic and secretive pagan culture, music contained, as it was developed in the West, the rhythms of that pre-literate sensibility. So the quadrivium is more aligned to oral culture in relation to the trivium. The trivium, logic, grammar, and rhetoric, began with Greece when they would look at the logos and present three angles on it. All right? So the logos was the word, the beginning of logocentric or speech, or visual and speech, literate, alphabetic knowledge. Music was in any environment to that. So we can see Croker as in representing the quadrivium. Even though LaRouche, Thompson, and McLuhan are within the quadrivium, but for purposes of this cartoon bounding shapes, Croker is playing in punk clubs in a band. McLuhan didn't do that, Croker didn't do that, Thompson didn't do that, all right? And Croker is younger than the first three, and he's growing up with pop culture. He has on the cover of...
He produced that really great CD, Spasm, with...
That was a book that he put out after...
And there was a CD, musical...
Right, I forgot to mention, that's interesting. When I first heard him on the radio, CKLN, somebody's playing a CD, which was a collection of stuff, before the Spasm CD came out, that was the CD accompanying the book Spasm, which came out in 93, a year before the theory of virtual class data trash, which didn't have a CD with it. But that CD, I don't know if it has the line on it, but whatever was put out in CD form in the late 80s, one of the phrases was, sort of repeated phrases was, the ear, it must be destroyed. The ear, it must be destroyed. Something like that. And is Croker pro-ear? Who's saying that? But let's assume Croker is trying to save the ear, or the quadrivial, the pop culture sensibility which he grew up with, because on the cover of Panic Encyclopedia is a picture of Elvis. He, and a subtitle underneath the picture of Elvis as a virtual commodity, something like that, a virtual or hyper commodity. So there he has, and I know that Croker used to go to Oldies dances with his wife. Some article written on him said that in Montreal they went to Oldies dances and that. And so on. Croker played hockey. He was playing hockey in the 80s when he was starting to become known as the McLuhan of the 90s. But in the 80s when he was starting to make a scene, he's playing local hockey in some men's league or whatever. You know what I mean? In Montreal. So that's cool. That's getting close to my sensibility, a hockey player, a musician, and all that stuff that I do. So he's representing pagan culture a little more. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And the quadrivial residue, the quadrivium, that for political terms is called anarchist. All right? Iconoclast. But they're all iconoclasts, so anarchist. Anyways, Croker... I mean, I talked to Mary Louise once, and she was talking about their journal, which she's won awards for designing the journal in the 80s. And the books they put out in the 80s, New World Editions books, New World Perspectives, that's the name of the press in Montreal. She was considered a pretty cool designer, and she told me that the stuffy world of academia they wanted to bypass, and she said the fascist mentality... So she called this, you know, literate academic stuffiness fascist. Now that's like an anarchist talking, right?
Mm-hmm.
Harmless professors, and they're fascist because of their sensibility or their print-orientedness or 19th-century-ness. So that's why I think that we call them in the anarchist sensibility. And a lot of the thinkers and writers of North America adopting Baudrillard and those guys, and even Baudrillard himself, were considered anarchists in the late 80s and early 90s. I was at a conference, and one of the professors from California, I think he was talking about the postmodern explosion of the 80s and 90s as the influence of anarchists in academia. Okay, so that's Croker, and we've laid out the Now, one thing, when you say mythic government in your little intro croaker, myth is my term for virtual reality. Myth doesn't mean phony, doesn't mean untrue, it means participatory and alive, but in media that are considered not as important as the book. The literary society considers other modalities as fake or pseudo and not as important as the book, so they would put it down by saying, that's a myth. That's not scientifically verifiable. That myth comes back as a viable environment and beyond literate categories of true or false in the electric 20th century. McLuhan said, explore myth. So, and he would define myth as pattern recognition. So that's why, but for Croker, it's myth as the new digital body, chip body world, and how we participate in it. It's a virtual reality. It's a mythic world. The Reagan presidency, the Teflon presidency, Reagan was a mythic presidency, right?
Mm-hmm.
People would say the Bush presidency was a mythic presidency. Mm-hmm. But it's a bit different, but we'll go into that later. So I think we've done Croker.
Yeah, well, now, do you think I was off the beam in my little diddly here where I suggest that myth is a function of looking into data patterns that are so dense that they can't really be separated out, but you can project patterns onto them, which become myth in a way, so that you can talk about them?
That's a description of myth as virtual. If you take, you're developing, you know, very well, the basic definition of McLuhan, if myth is pattern recognition, then you're dealing with the virtual overloaded information society and miniaturization of information pattern recognition, so that's why you call it data-dense myth. Your description is exactly how myth is applied to Croker.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Now, why don't you reread what you said about Croker in light of what I said, and it might make more sense to people.
Okay. I say that his insights correspond to the mythic government phase of technology we entered into around 1980, as per your charts. His job is like a deep sea diver to feel around the deep for archaeological traces of phantom creatures. In this case, the creatures are media archetypes that have compressed into patterns of virtual data flesh. These merging patterns are abstract and difficult to recognize using perceptual modes of pattern recognition. Because data in this realm is not discrete, Croker must assume the role of artist, and like shaman entering into the realm of the densely packed, his job is to return with stories that compress excessively imploded and overloaded patterns of information into simplified patterns of living metaphor. Teasing out data creatures from this realm causes them to become perceptible and thus manageable.
Well, that's right. That's pretty good.
Okay.
Look at data flesh, the merging of biology and media and technology, genetic engineering, you get data creatures.
Yeah.
Okay, so I thought another thing to add. Just a second, I'm just taking a bite here. Remember chewing?
Yeah, I can put the tape on hold.
No, it's all right. Just wonder if you can hear me.
All right.
Just a little multi-sensoriness, not just visitor talk. Okay. I was thinking about how these categories within the trivium, logic, LaRouche's dialectician, McLuhan as rhetorician, and Thompson as grammarian, let's look, since they themselves are not limited to that, and they explore the quadrivium, I would say LaRouche is the astronomer, McLuhan is the musician, and Thompson is the arithmetic, math, geometry. He has written about the mathematical mentalities. He calls them the literate and mathematical mentalities in his recent books. He was influenced by the mathematician Ralph Abraham. So within the quadrivium, McLuhan is music, LaRouche is astronomy. You know how he wants to go to Mars, and he does a lot on the history of astronomy, and he says astronomy is more important than the astrology being pagan culture. And Thompson is arithmetic and geometry. I mean, he talks about geometry and has very good. And if you know McLuhan, Thompson adds some important dimensions to McLuhan that McLuhan didn't include, and supplements McLuhan's history of the changes in culture and technology. especially in the West. So that's interesting. I have never laid that out before about the quadrivium. Mm-hmm. Now, in the essay Up the Orphic Ante, which I did in 96 or so, 10 years ago, I say that LaRouche dances on the toes of technological liberalism. So that's more than just dialectics. That's the 20th century of dealing with engineers and guys who invent new media, new technologies, new hardware, new software, right? So that's, and one of the terms for that is technological liberalism. I think that's the term Croker uses for that kind of mentality, technological liberals. I say that LaRouche dances on the toes of technological liberalism, that tradition, that meme. McLuhan dances on the toes of Catholic Thomism. Thompson dances on the toes of Buddhism, I think I say. Buddhism, mysticism, the esoteric. And Croker dances on the toes of Marxism, which, as McLuhan said, was a literary genre, a kind of literary output that a lot of leftist writers in the 20th century developed and worked out of what they perceived Marx had done or failed to have done, but they use him as a base text. So when we say these guys dance on the toes, they're not limited to their particular meme or tradition. They provide any environments to that.